The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Scottish government continues to discuss plans to implement expanded harm reduction and overdose prevention services. Recently, Scotland's Minister for Drugs and Alcohol Policy, Elena Whittam, presented a statement on drug deaths to the Scottish Parliament and answered questions from MSPs. We'll hear portions of that later. But first, Harm Reduction International has released a report entitled Aid for the War on Drugs, which follows overseas development aid that's being spent on policing and drug control around the world. The report calls on governments and donors to divest from punitive and prohibitionist drug control regimes, which undermine their other health and human rights commitments, and invest instead in programs which prioritize community, health, and justice. Here's the report's author, Claire Provost, a senior investigative journalist, editor, and author with particular experience in cross-border, follow-the-money, and feminist investigations.
The global war on drugs is a strategy that has repeatedly failed. It is ideological. It is counterproductive with potentially disastrous consequences for some of the world's poorest. Those are just examples of direct quotes from reports from the World Bank, the European Parliament, and also from UK aid-funded research. The evidence base is now very wide indeed that punitive approaches to drugs fail to reduce drug use, but succeed in perpetuating human rights abuses and impeding public health responses. And yet, according to this new research that we're releasing today, dozens of donors, aid donors led by the US and the EU, have used some of their aid budgets for narcotics control activities in the decade from 2012 to 2021. As mentioned before, these are dedicated budgets that are supposed to support poverty reduction and development goals, including the fight against HIV and AIDS. And from these budgets, we identified almost $1 billion of aid that was spent on narcotics control over that period, including about 70 million spent in countries where there is the death penalty for drug-related offenses. The report, Aid for the War on Drugs, is based on analysis of data that donors themselves reported to the OECD in Paris. The OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, currently sets the rules on what kind of spending donors can count as aid. But the details of what can be included include things that few taxpayers will be aware of. And they include narcotics control, which is an official subcategory currently of eligible aid spending. It's assigned this sector code 16063, and it covers a range of activities to, quote, restrict narcotics traffic and distribution. This subcategory wasn't always there within the aid definition. It was introduced in the 1990s when a number of changes were made to include spending on global issues, also including peacekeeping and the environment. And these changes were made to maintain the relevance of aid in a globalized world. But the few people know about these details. So when we looked into the data, we looked at this decade of aid spending from 2012 to 2021, which is the latest full year that's currently available in the OECD's aid database. The US tops the list with the most money spent under this category over the time period examined, followed by EU institutions, then Japan, the UK, Germany, and Finland. Overall, dozens of donors have used at least some of their aid budgets this way since 2012, many of whom are from Europe. If you look at EU institutions plus the individual European countries on the list, Europe is a significant contributor to this, as well as the US. And the amounts of money that have been dedicated to narcotics control are small shares of overall aid spending. Aid budgets are really large overall. But that dedicated to narcotics control can still rival or exceed spending that's been dedicated to other things. So, for example, in 2021, more aid was categorized as spent on narcotics control than on school feeding, labor rights, or mental health projects, just to name a few examples. In terms of recipients, countries around the world have been categorized as recipients of aid for narcotics control, including a number that have the death penalty for drug-related offenses that are shaded in darker blue on this map. So as examples of this, in 2021, some U.S. aid went to support a counter-narcotics training program in Indonesia, where that same year, a record of at least 89 people were sentenced to death over drug-related offenses. Also, between 2012 and 2019, some Japanese aid went to support counter-narcotics activities in Iran, which in 2021 executed at least 131 people for drug-related offenses. Other examples of funded projects underneath this category of narcotics control include, and you can see on the screen these examples, funding for the upscaling of airport controls in Bolivia, support to enhance intelligence-led profiling of passengers in Colombia, to support surveillance capacity of the Mozambique Intelligence Service, polygraph training in the Dominican Republic, undercover police training in Peru, sharing skills, experience, and training on counter-narcotics with the Brazilian Federal Police. All of these are quite far from what most people picture when they think of aid spending and beneficiaries of aid projects. And in fact, aid donors, when they talk about their aid spending, don't mention these kind of projects. You're more likely to think of and imagine schools, health clinics, not police and prosecutions and arrests and this kind of activity and this kind of system being supported. Though not all of the project records in donors' aid data have detailed information, there are limits to the transparency in the OECD's aid data. And within that, the records for narcotics control include a number that have been redacted, in particular from the U.S., the leading spender. In 2021, many of their aid data records under narcotics control said that information had been redacted, including in the national interest of the United States. Other U.S. records explain, meanwhile, that these aid projects under this category help advance U.S. national security interests, including by enhancing cooperation with U.S. law enforcement. This struck us as significant because the OECD, you know, officially says that aid is not supposed to prioritize donors' national security or commercial interests. It's supposed to prioritize development and development goals, which include health goals and human rights objectives. And the negative consequences of punitive approaches to drugs on health and human rights, as mentioned, have been extensively documented, and they include things like mass incarceration, discriminatory policing, extrajudicial killings, the use of the death penalty in some countries, very well documented as well, disproportionate harms to people of color, as well as stigma and discrimination that threatens access to services, including health services. So everyone without exception has the right to life-saving harm reduction interventions was a message of a group of UN human rights experts in 2022 last year, who called for an end to war on drugs and the promotion of policies rooted in rights instead. Harm reduction interventions seek to mitigate the negative health, social, and economic consequences of using drugs without necessarily ending drug use. They include activities to stem the spread of HIV and AIDS, as well as those to combat criminalization and stigma. These interventions seem to be a much better fit than narcotics control for spending from dedicated budgets that are supposed to help poor communities and development goals while doing no harm, as the OECD has said itself. So today's report, in terms of what must happen, today's report argues that donors should divest from punitive responses to drugs and invest in harm reduction alternatives that are based on human rights, health-based approaches, and evidence, importantly, evidence. The aid system must be more transparent and held accountable to its core purpose to support international development while doing no harm. There should be no place for narcotics control in discussions around the future of aid. Worryingly, some discussions about potential new ways of measuring support for international development and what are called global public goods have continued to include this category. Instead, such discussions should be opportunities to challenge and change this.
That was Claire Provost, a senior investigative journalist and author of a new report from Harm Reduction International entitled Aid for the War on Drugs. Find out more at the Harm Reduction International website, hri.global. That's hri.global. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the Scottish government is continuing to discuss how to move forward in implementing expanded harm reduction and overdose prevention services, following a report by the UK House of Commons Home Affairs Committee that recommends setting up a pilot safe consumption site in Glasgow. Scotland's Minister for Drugs and Alcohol Policy, Elena Whittam, presented a statement on drug deaths on September 12th.
Last month saw the publication of the drug-related death statistics from the National Records of Scotland, which confirmed that we lost 1,051 fellow citizens to drugs in 2022. Every person lost is a tragedy and one that is felt keenly by families and communities right across Scotland. And I want to send my condolences to each and every person affected by a loss from drug use, deaths which are as preventable as they are unnecessary. And the collective loss of all of that talent and potential from across the country is heartbreaking. The figures from NRS do show a decline in the number of deaths in 2022, a reduction of 279 from the previous year, the largest on-year decline on record. And whilst this is, of course, welcome, these numbers are still far too high. And we remain committed to delivering our national mission to ensure that we continue to see further reductions in these tragic deaths. Most of the decrease was seen in males, with a reduction of 26% from 2021, down to 692 deaths, and the number of female deaths was down 10% on the previous year. And this further reinforces the need for us to deliver on those initiatives which will be of benefit to women, though recognising that men remain at the highest risk of a drug's death. It is also encouraging to see drops in nearly all age groups. Deaths in the under 25s fell slightly, but the greatest reduction were in those age groups 25 to 39, which all reduced by over a third. The only group where there was a rise in deaths was in the over 55s, where there was an increase of 8 from 2021. As in previous years, the majority of deaths involved more than one drug use, with an average of 3 substances implicated or present in a death, highlighting that polydrug use continues to be a significant challenge for us to tackle. And opioids were the most commonly implicated drug, though again, there was a slight reduction to 867 deaths. And deaths from benzodiazepines also remain high. They were implicated in 57% of deaths, although the prevalence of street benzodiazepine remains a real concern, with them being implicated in nearly half of all drugs deaths. Deaths involving cocaine reduced from 403 in 2021 to 371 in 2022, but make up an increasing proportion of drug-related deaths. The implications of this make clear the need for more support availability for people with problem cocaine use, and I will be following up with local areas to understand what provision is currently available and planned in this area. Two-thirds of Scottish Council areas saw a fall in deaths, but there's so much more to do. However, and I am clear that buy-in and accountability for implementing the national mission locally is a fundamental requirement for seeing progress across the whole country. Since taking up this portfolio, I visited many parts of the country, seen the recovery and treatment services in operation, and spoken to people who are benefiting from some of the transformational changes that have already taken place as a result of the national mission. Whether through the work being done to implement the MAT standards, through improvement being made to for accessing residential treatment services, or through increased investment in grassroots organisations. And I believe the tireless effort of those on the front line continue to put in has contributed to the reduction in drug-related deaths in 2022, and I would like to thank every single one of them for your ongoing commitment to that work. And I also include all of the families on the front line here too. I see you. However, I'm in no way complacent about the work still to be done, and this is borne out by the suspected drug deaths figures for the first half of 2022 published this morning. These figures indicate that there were 600 suspected drug deaths between January and June of 2023, an increase of 38 on the same period in 2022. We need to be doing all that we can to try and continue to decrease the deaths we've seen in 2022. Complex problems require multiple solutions, and all of them are valid. This means continuing our work to deliver our MAT standards, continuing our work to increase treatment options, including residential rehab, but also continuing in our efforts to push harm reduction initiatives. Yesterday, the Lord Advocate set out her position in relation to the proposal for a safer drug consumption facility in Glasgow. The Lord Advocate stated that if Glasgow authorities were to open a pilot facility, the Lord Advocate would be prepared to issue a statement of prosecution policy to the effect that it would not be in the public interest to prosecute people for possession of illegal drugs within the confines of that facility. It is a position that I strongly welcome. Whilst the position of the Lord Advocate does not sanction or approve the establishment of a safer consumption facility, it provides a necessary assurance to Glasgow authorities, who will now take their proposal to the Integrated Joint Board for approval. And whilst there are still limitations around what a facility operating within existing legislation could do, this is fantastic news and represents a real step forward in establishing the first official safer drug consumption facility in the UK. We have been clear in our commitment to establishing a safer drug consumption facility. The evidence supporting them around the world is extensive, with 16 countries with legal and operational drug consumption rooms in 2022. Following the position from the Lord Advocate, we will now work closely with colleagues in Glasgow to agree next steps and review options around implementation, including funding. This is a significant step forward for us in Scotland. However, even with this helpful position from the Lord Advocate, a safer drug consumption facility operating in Scotland will still be restricted by the Misuse of Drugs Act. Therefore, the best approach would be for the UK government to give us approval for a safer drug consumption facility. So I would again repeat my call to the UK government to work with us on this issue and either give us that approval for a pilot or devolve the necessary powers to us. The recess period also saw the publication of the alcohol-specific death stats from NRS, which recorded that there has been a rise of 2% since 2021 to a total of 1,276 deaths in 2022. And again, I would convey my sympathies to all of those who have lost a loved one. No one should die as a result of alcohol consumption. And we are working with partners to continue to deliver a range of activity to ensure that people are able to access the correct form of treatment when they require it. We will continue to take a whole population approach to tackle alcohol-related harm in line with the World Health Organization's focus on affordability, availability and attractiveness of alcohol. And the Programme for Government reaffirmed this commitment, and we will soon be publishing a report on minimum unit pricing alongside a consultation on its future, both in terms of continuation of the scheme and, if so, at what price. We are also reviewing the responses to the alcohol marketing consultation. No one should be in any doubt that we will take further action to reduce alcohol harm and particularly to protect children from its ill effects. At the end of August, we also recognised International Overdose Awareness Day. Coming so close to our publication of our annual drug-related death figures, this is always a poignant day here in Scotland. As part of that day, I was pleased to be able to spend some time with Police Scotland colleagues, 1 year on from the rollout of their national naloxone carriage initiative. Police Scotland are the only national police force in the world where every frontline officer is trained in the use of naloxone and carries a kit for use in the event of encountering an overdose. And to date, police officers have administered naloxone on more than 300 separate occasions. One of the officers I spoke with told me if someone had been trained in the use of naloxone in the morning and then they actually had to administer it later that day. Police Scotland hope that by having officers carrying naloxone in a highly visible manner, that it will encourage others to learn about naloxone and consider carrying it themselves. This is the message I would reiterate, and I would encourage everyone here to get themselves trained and to carry a kit. September is also International Recovery Month, and I'm pleased to have been invited to take part in a number of events so far this month and further events still to come. As Minister of Drugs and Alcohol Policy, I welcome these opportunities to join with communities, to stand with them in support of the work that they do, but also to demonstrate our commitment to recovery and providing people with the support that they need when they need it. And as we continue to deliver on that commitment through our national mission, I'm delighted to see the publication of a report from the Cora Foundation today, which provides an overview of the various projects funded through the national mission funds from April 21 until March 2023. And following the recent funding round announced in May 2023, this core funding, totalling £65 million over the lifetime of this Parliament, now supports more than 200 grassroots and third sector projects across Scotland. And vitally, these funds are multi-year, which provides much-needed assurance to those funded organisations and which is highly welcomed across the sector. And I recently visited one of these funded projects, Back on the Road, which is a unique employability project in Glasgow's East End, supporting those in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction issues. Through the restoration of vintage vehicles and training and workshop practices, alongside the development of softer skills required in a work environment, they develop an individual's self-worth, sense of belonging, and feeling of self-responsibility. In addition, they also build trust with others, their workshop colleagues and their tutors, thus furthering reducing the stigma around addiction. And this is just one example of what this funding can do. The report published today provides information on the outcomes and progress, along with the challenges and successes of all the funded projects, which have supported over 37,000 people across Scotland. So, Presiding Officer, despite the progress we have seen to date, both in terms of funding allocated, but more importantly in the lives saved, I remain in no doubt about the work that still remains in front of us. We know that the most important thing remains being able to offer people the type of treatment that works best for them at the time that works for them. And we know that there remain a number of challenges for us to address in order to get to that point. However, we also know that change is possible, and this reduction in our drug deaths figures show that the work we are doing is making a difference.
That was Scotland's Minister for Drugs and Alcohol Policy, Elena Whittam, speaking before the Scottish Parliament on September 12th. The Minister took questions. While we have time, let's hear some. First, here's Audrey Nicol, MSP for Aberdeen South and North Kincardine.
Thank you. We know that there is a wealth of international evidence supporting safer drug consumption facilities, so it is hugely welcome to have confirmation that if a facility of the type described in the Glasgow proposal were to open as a pilot, then the Lord Advocate would be prepared to publish a statement of prosecution policy that it would not be in the public interest to prosecute users of that facility for simple possession offences committed within the confines of the facility. So given this latest development, can the Minister set out the Scottish Government's next steps in supporting Glasgow to establish this vital facility?
Minister.
It is now for Glasgow's Health and Social Care Partnership to take the proposal to the next meeting of their Integrated Joint Board, and I understand that that's scheduled for the 27th of September. In order to proceed, they will need to provide an update to their Integrated Joint Board and to be instructed to undertake a public consultation work as requested by the Lord Advocate to establish the evaluation framework for this pilot. That's so important, that public consultation work. We have been clear in our commitment to establishing a safer drug consumption facility in Scotland, and following the position from the Lord Advocate, we will continue to work closely with colleagues in Glasgow to agree the next steps and review options around implementation, including funding.
That was Elena Whittam replying to a question from Audrey Nicol, MSP. Now here's Paul Sweeney, MSP for Glasgow.
Thank you, Presiding Officer. Yesterday's announcement from the Lord Advocate is a vindication for all of those who have long said this was possible, particularly Peter Crichton, who I worked with on an unofficial overdose prevention pilot in Glasgow in 2020, saving 8 lives, and who is in the gallery today. In 2017, the previous Lord Advocate said it wasn't possible, despite operating under the same laws and guidance as the current Lord Advocate. So can the Minister tell us what exactly has changed with the latest proposal over those 6 years that makes this possible now? And what does she have to say to the 7,127 families who have lost loved ones since the previous Lord Advocate rejected the original proposal, many of whom would still be alive today if there hadn't been such devastating intransigence from people in positions of power in this country?
Minister.
I think we need to recognise that the proposal that was put in front of the previous Lord Advocate was much wider in its scope, and that proposal actually asked the former Lord Advocate to change the law, which he was not able to do. And he set out in his response to that request the reasons why he couldn't. And that was why it was really important for time to be taken to work through a proposal that was actually going to meet the parameters that's set by the new Lord Advocate to the Justice Committee in November 2021. And that was worked on solidly by officials within Scottish Government, partners within the Health and Social Care Partnership of Glasgow and Police Scotland to arrive to a position where the information that was set in front of the Lord Advocate allowed her to come to the position that she came to yesterday.
That was Elena Whittam replying to a question from Paul Sweeney, MSP. Now, here's Alex Cole-Hamilton, MSP for Edinburgh Western.
Thank you very much, Presiding Officer. And like the Minister, I too was pleased to read yesterday's update from the Lord Advocate around a safer consumption facility in Glasgow. And I pay tribute to Peter Crichton in the gallery and indeed our colleague Paul Sweeney for the groundbreaking, pioneering work they did in this area. Around 100 people a month are still dying in our drug deaths emergency, and there is not a moment to lose here. We are slipping backwards. We saw that in statistics today. And there are people hundreds of miles outside of Glasgow who could also benefit from a space like this. So can I ask, how is the government going to share learning from this pilot, and is it acting right now to build towards establishing a network of safe consumption facilities as soon as possible so that everyone who needs that help can get access to life-saving services?
Minister.
I share and echo Alex Cole Hamilton's desire to see a network of these facilities right across the country, because I think that is the way that we are actually going to interrupt the most amount of harm and save lives. What we have before us from the Lord Advocate is a position that she is willing to take under this specific proposal that was in front of her. And that's a pilot that we have to actually evaluate and understand how that actually operates. That does not give us the right to then roll out other facilities across the country, because that's the limitations that we're operating under with the Lord Advocate taking this position, as opposed to having the full powers to do it ourselves, or having the UK government work with us to ensure that we can have safer drug consumption facilities right across the UK.
That was Elena Whittam replying to a question from Alex Cole Hamilton, MSP. Now here's Kocab Stewart, MSP for Glasgow Kelvin.
Thank you. I welcome the Minister's update and the support that she is offering Glasgow's pilot of safe consumption facility. The UK Home Affairs Committee recently found that the drug laws are outdated and in need of reform to support greater use of public health-based drug interventions. Does the Minister agree with me that the UK Government does need to give proper consideration to the Scottish Government's progressive proposals to reform and to start treating problematic drug use as a public health issue rather than that one of criminalisation?
Minister.
I absolutely welcome the cross-party Westminster Home Affairs Committee report that was released just last month, recommending a review of the current drug laws. Multiple committees and experts and independent organisations have already called for an urgent review, including the Independent Drugs Deaths Task Force. We have been clear that what we face in Scotland in terms of drug deaths is a public health emergency, and we cannot rely on only one route to change. We are working hard within the powers that we do have, and whilst there's more that we need to do, the fact remains that the legal framework which we operate in undermines our public health approach. And we are open to a full range of options and have set out policies which could be implemented through the devolution of further powers to Holyrood, including powers to change the criminal law on the use of drugs. Wider constitutional changes such as Scottish independence are clearly the fastest and the simplest way forward is for the UK government to review and change the Misuse of Drugs Act to support a public health approach across the entirety of the UK. Drugs deaths are increasing across the whole of the UK, despite the welcome decrease that we saw in 2022. And we are going to experience the increasing prevalence of really strong synthetics and even stronger street benzodiazepines. So I think we need to have all of the weapons in our armoury to be able to respond to that.
That was Scottish Minister for Drugs and Alcohol Policy Elena Whittam replying to a question from Kocab Stewart, MSP. The expansion of harm reduction services, decriminalisation of people who use drugs, and other drug policy reforms in the UK, and particularly in Scotland, are all developing stories. When there's more news, you'll hear it here. So keep tuning in.
Westminster.
For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port Service. Find this edition of Century along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.